You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good evening. Welcome to the Pirates Fan Forum here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Happy to be back with you. And boy, we can't wait to start talking about the Buccos, who have actually been playing some pretty good ball. I mean, 500 on the nose for the last month. So, I mean, it's hard to complain about that. So I figured I'd complain about something else. I mean, the scene in Pittsburgh lately has just taken a crazy diversion on the Pirates recently. And I think when I started doing this, the reason I started was because I felt like there was so much misinformation and just silly projections going on out in the world that I figured the Pirates needed to be covered a little bit more fairly. Fortunately, I found somebody that did, and he's on the show today, Craig and Jim Stamm. We both want to take time to just make sure everybody understands that what you perceive sometimes as a beef online between bloggers is not a beef about anybody being able to say anything they'd like to say. There's an audience for everything. If you want to read stories that guys are going to jump from single A to start in the major leagues next year and you want to buy into that and that makes you happy, fine. I'd rather just tell you the truth. And let you face the truth and feel it and understand what's actually going to come your way. Because what it leads to is a situation where people wind up buying it and then blaming the organization when it doesn't turn out that way. You know, like somebody will say, Ronzi Contreras is going to start in major leagues next year, Jim. And then when he doesn't, who gets blamed for it? Charrington gets blamed for slow walking him. Nutting gets blamed for not wanting to start his arbitration clock. Everyone else gets blamed because we badmouthed him and that's why he got kept back. It's such a silly premise. And I would like to say that we can all just get along because I have plenty of blogger friends and I talk to them all the time and I have them on the show all the time. But I don't want to just let things go that are completely overtly silly out there because they'll end up coming back to me anyway. I may not directly respond to somebody's post, but that post indirectly ends up coming back to me as a question that I have to answer. And I'm going to answer it truthfully. I'm not going to answer it to spare someone's feelings. I'm sorry. If you're going to project things like that and put them out, it's going to get talked about. That's really all there is to it. And that's what we're going to do on this show a little bit today is talk about some of those crazy projections and talk about some realistic ones as well. And to do that, as always, we got Mr. Jim Stamm with me.
How's it going, everybody?
And we got my good friend and writing partner, Craig Toth, on the show.
How you doing, guys?
Doing real good, man. So I figured today let's get started right away with that topic. It's been nuts lately. People are really, really projecting some insane things. I saw somebody yesterday said Henry Davis was going to compete in spring training as a starting catcher, and they were going to trade Jacob Stallings to make room for him.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting take.
Should we just let that go? I mean, that's my question really, is should we just let that go, or do we actively need to talk about that? When it's somebody that has enough followers to do damage, do you need to actually discuss it?
I think I do. Yeah, I mean, I think when you made some great points there about how, you know, it ends up coming back around to us in some way, shape, or form, or the Pirates, or people just take that as gospel, and all of a sudden now you've got misinformation out there. And when we're trying to do a show, or you and Craig are writing and doing pieces, you know, you're going to have to fight against that when it shouldn't even be an issue in the first place. You'd much rather just be focusing on the topics you have at hand. And people want to, you know, say, why do you hate so-and-so? Man, first of all, this is Twitter. This is social media. Yeah. I don't hate anybody.
Could forget a comma and have somebody think you're trying to start a nuclear war.
Right.
So, I mean, I get it.
It's just one of those things where it's not about hating anybody. It's about very, very much disliking the work and the content they're putting out. If it's even theirs in the first place.
Exactly. And that's another point, because Craig, you know, we often have people mistakenly call us journalists. We're not journalists. We're not even trying to be. We're writing a blog. There's a big difference between bloggers and podcasters and journalists. And it's something that everyone really needs to learn, because these people really are doing real work. Journalists are part of the ecosystem that feeds us.
And more specifically, what a reporter is.
Exactly.
My goodness.
But they're gathering information, they're interviewing people, they're getting quotes that we don't have access to. We take that content they provide, and then we expound upon it with opinions. That's what we do. That's how the ecosystem works. And when we take a video clip from them, we ask and we use it. If they say no, we don't use it. I mean, Craig, you've been dealing with this for a long time, too. And at some point, it just kind of gets exhausting.
Yeah. And I think there was, to a certain degree, with the pandemic, some of the lines became blurred a little bit because of the limited access that even the journalists had, where some of the journalists were, I wouldn't say not doing their job, but they were also voicing more of their opinions. And it's not that I don't think they should have opinions, but a lot of the times it's like breaking that line of, okay, you wrote this or you tweeted this.
Yeah.
Is this an actual opinion you have, or is this something you've heard from within the organization? So there was like that little bit of a line blurred. And then with social media, pretty much anybody can have a voice.
Yeah.
And whatever they choose to do with that voice, and like you said, however many followers they get, then you'll see that influence. And then nobody's really attacking anybody. And I really stopped even commenting on a lot of stuff. I'll retweet stuff if I see a video or something I think that's funny.
You had to do that for mental health, though, man.
I did, because it would just drive me nuts, because I didn't want to get in these arguments with people when there's really nothing I can say that's either going to change their mind. And even if I provide them with facts, it still isn't going to change their mind. So I just had to kind of get away from that. Yeah. I did make like a comment to Jason Mackey yesterday when he said, you know, that he wrote actually a really great piece about the Pirates in Bradenton, because it was the only game that was on that night.
Right.
But then basically said this was the last time since 2016, and then showed the roster from 2016. And I was just made a comment of, oh, you mean just because this team, you know, wins this championship, it doesn't translate to Major League? Because you look at that roster and it's got Trevor Williams on it. It's got Kevin Kramer on it. I mean, it was a glutton for punishment. It was just to even look at that.
We all know what a stud Kevin Kramer turned into. So
big time.
Yeah. But I mean, my biggest thing is that like, never portray anything as your own if it's not.
Right.
We all know how to do the Twitter screen grabs where you can run it through a system and put it back up where it doesn't attach of who it's from. I just don't see the point of that. If I see something cool, I see a home run, I'll retweet it. And if somebody likes it, great. If somebody gets to see it, great. But if not, it's not anything that I put out. It's something that either the team or, you know, one of those guys that's sitting down there working their butts off scouting or doing whatever freelancing, they work to get that. And even like taking something, I think something silly is taking something off of somebody's Instagram that they posted. It's just goofy to me. Like it's out there for everybody. And yeah, you're giving everybody like a kind of a place to look at it.
Right.
But you didn't take that video. Like it belongs to either the cameraman or something. To me, it's just goofy.
You made a really good point though. There. I think that is something that happened a little bit during COVID is that a lot of the journalists, you know, still had their access and their Zoom calls and everything, but we were all able to watch those Zoom calls too, for the most part, you know, pretty quickly. So there wasn't really any kind of distinguishing difference there besides just having some contacts, which a lot of bloggers do as well. So I do think the lines got blurred a little bit there, but it's time to like step back and just realize that this is an ecosystem that functions best when everybody understands their place, because I think there's room for everybody to be celebrated and worked with together and enjoyed, and we can all enrich each other's lives, or we can just continue to make things silly. Well, that's where I feel like it's gotten.
It's gotten silly. And, you know, we all sit back and we see what happens on Twitter and things unfold and there's drama
all the time.
Oh, but you know, look, here's the thing about it. When we sit and talk about the Pirates, it's very important to us and Craig that we do it in a factual, analysis-based way, whether that's positive, whether that's negative. That should be a byproduct of what we're talking about. If it happens to be positive, great. Yeah. If it happens to be negative, great. But when you put stuff out and you want to just use the cliche that, well, I'm just a positive person.
That
doesn't hold water in this line of work if you want to be taken seriously.
No, but eventually what happens to you, and we'll go ahead and take our first break here after this, but what eventually happens to you is you become a politician. You said what people wanted to hear at some point, and then once you got in office where the Pirates actually win, yeah, they find that you were full of crap. That's the truth. So be straight with people. They deserve it, and they're smart enough to understand it. That's really what everything should be about. That we're all about.
Well, here's the thing: is like hot takes will get you a following in the short term, but providing, you know, factual information and an actual deep diving, good analysis will maintain that in the long term. So I feel like some of these people or whoever it would be that are out there that are making these hot takes, people will see through it eventually. And, you know, when what they say is going to happen doesn't come to fruition, then, I mean, they won't be around anymore.
Right. Just like my record prediction this year. So when we let's talk a little bit about that record prediction, huh? Let's take a break.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, and we're back to the Pirates Fan Forum here on DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network, and it's time to start talking some baseball now. We've jerked around a little bit enough about social media, and I think it's time to move on and
let's get to the important stuff
and move past our producer dropping something on the floor there, and, and talk a little bit about our weekly poll question here that we put up, because you know the Pirates, they need to go 6-5 here to avoid 100 losses, and it seems more doable than I really thought possible a month ago. So I figured let's put up a poll and let's find out what the fans actually think of that. Do they care? I mean, on the surface, when I put the poll up, I'm thinking, yeah, most people are going to say, yeah, we don't want you to lose 100 games.
I thought the same thing.
I'm going to throw it over to you because you're all set for it.
Yeah. So a little surprising, I thought. So, The poll question was this, real simple. Is not losing 100 games important to you? Explain why or why not and vote. So we had a pretty decent sample size. It was 215 votes.
Not bad.
Yeah. So there was yes, no, or 99 equals 100. Don't be silly. So I'll tell you, surprisingly, at least for me, no, 57% of the people that voted said that it is not that important to them.
Yeah, I was kind of taken back by that, to be honest with you. A lot of the comments, you know, and when I saw the results, I'm thinking all the comments are going to be filled with I want that top draft pick or something, right?
Yeah, and no, but it wasn't
that. Not what people responded. So I mean, maybe that's why a lot of people voted that way, but that's definitely not what we saw. So
even yes was only 27%.
Right.
So we're down into, and then 99 equals 100 was 16%. So it was overwhelmingly no. And I thought, well, maybe it's a little more important to the people who really feel like they're plugged in more, as opposed to maybe a casual fan. That maybe that was the distinction there.
You're basically saying, like, maybe I'm sitting here looking at my future comment board.
Yeah. Craig, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I voted and I commented, and mine was that, yes, it did matter to me. And the only reason it actually did matter to me was because of the fallout that could come after that, because then that would give people their talking points. That would give certain members of the Pittsburgh media reason to, you know, blow up the morning drive in or the afternoon drive home with that 100 losses, or people that, you know, would usually say spend nutting, win nutting. It would just give them, hey, this is our, I think it would be eighth 100 loss season in the history of the franchise. Last time coming in 2010 for those that remember that. And even then, like after those, you know, three winning seasons, that 100 loss team is something that is still mentioned and that people still go back to. If it doesn't have that big round number and somehow would turn out to be 98 or 99 losses, it's not as easy to point to and to point out.
That's terribly hard to do. I mean, if you think about how long the Pittsburgh Pirates have been an organization.
Yeah.
To only have it happen seven times. I mean, it's what, when I did my prediction this year, I thought to myself, is this a 100 loss team?
Well, let's go. I'll throw my prediction out there because it's going to be wrong. And hey, it's okay to admit when we're wrong, right? I mean, so mine, I said 97 losses. I really thought,
yeah, you might be there.
Maybe.
Could be there.
Maybe. But, you know, I just felt like, and we tried to hammer this point home before the season started, that losing 105 games or worse or something like that, that's really, really hard to do
right
in a baseball season. It can be done. We're seeing teams do it.
Yeah.
But so that was mine. I think
I went 92 and 70 or something. I know Craig had them losing. I think
he took the easy way out, man. He just said 99, so he didn't have to say 100.
Well, that's pretty much when I wrote up my thing for mine and Gary's website, is I just basically said I did not want to write 100.
And I don't want to say 100. I think that's fair, right?
Yeah.
So I guess it's fair to say the three of us don't represent that poll, because we kind of care. I don't want to see it. If it happens, I fully expected it. So maybe let's read a few of the comments that we got here, because I think we've spoken our mind on it.
Yeah. So this is directly related to the poll, and we do have some questions and stuff we want to get to too. So, but Scott Chamberlain, he said, yes, it's important to him because only 8 other teams in the franchise's other 139 years have done so. Also something for the Buccos shooting for the rest of the season. And I tend to agree with that, in the sense of you don't want that stamp on your resume as a franchise if you can avoid it.
Right.
And, you know, look, at the end of a long baseball season, if you tell those guys in that locker room, I'm curious to know if they care about that. I think they don't want that on their resume either, as players and coaches and whatnot.
It's funny, because even this morning on DK's Daily Shot, he talked about this very topic.
Oh, okay.
Like when I was listening to it, I was like, hey, we have a poll question. We're going to be talking about that ourselves tonight. But he was talking about it from a perspective of actually asking the players and coaches about it. And he was getting the same kind of answers he was getting when he would ask them about the importance of getting a sweep. You know, so you're not going to get that, oh yeah, it's super important to us, but they're playing like it's important. And I think that's kind of more important. You know, they wouldn't be in this position where it's even a conversation if they hadn't played 500 ball for a month. And when I look at that bullpen, I still kind of don't understand how they've done that. To be honest with you, I don't. They've played their best stretch of baseball this season with arguably their worst team.
Yeah, and isn't that funny? And we've talked about this before too. Is I don't know if it's some great sign of things to come. Bad baseball teams can play good baseball in certain stretches, and let's be honest, 500 for the Pirates is pretty good. What is 15 and 15 in the last 30 games? So
that was another thing that. Honestly, Dayon reminded me of this morning, and Craig, you probably remember this, and you might not have even lived here at the time. When the Pirates avoided the 100 losses with Lloyd McClendon, and he cracked champagne. Oh my! Like I had completely forgotten about.
I didn't know that. No,
but like two of the images from winning and losing that are burned into my head forever are Lloyd McClendon cracking champagne. And, who was the catcher? Tony Sanchez chugging two beers, double fisting in the locker room when he did absolutely nothing to get them into the playoffs in the first place. I loved it.
To me, is it hugely, hugely important? No. But I do think on some level for, you know, the Pirates, they want to finish on a good note. The players would like to. Hey, they're impacting a playoff race in the meantime. So if that means, you know, winning some games that maybe you didn't think you would, because a month ago when I looked at this, I thought this is impossible. Yeah, they're going to lose 100. So it's just nice to even be in a position to have something to at least shoot for at the end of the year.
Yeah, it is. Incremental goals, man. You know?
Let me see. I might have one more. Let me see if I got another comment here from someone that did respond. Nolan Grossman. This is from Twitter.
Nolan's always good.
Yeah. So he said, they are what they are right now. This is just part of the process. People don't like it, but this is exactly what the Astros did before exploding. We could do without the cheating aspect of that, but we'll let that go for now. And we just have to hope our farm system elevates the talent we brought in.
Good. I think we are seeing that. And I mean, we'll talk about that a little bit more in the next segment, because some of that elevation is starting to actually go on. But I think it's time for us to dive into some questions before we move on to the next segment.
Yeah. And you know what? I like doing the Q&As, because for me, you know, we sit and we bounce back and forth topics and whatnot. And then somebody actually has, you know, a good question. I didn't think of it. And it's something good to put on. So I've got a few of those for us today.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go first with, and you know what, Craig, I'm going to let you take this one because I want to see what you say here.
Okay.
This is from Kevin Plaucha. I hope I said that right, Kevin. You can just send me an email and I'll make sure we get it corrected for the next time. But he said, all right, who is a dark horse double A prospect you can see working their way up to the majors for the Pirates?
Well, the first one that it wasn't a dark horse, but it kind of just automatically clicked into my head to begin with was Ji-Won Bae. And it's maybe because I just wrote about him, but also because he wasn't promoted and has been playing well all along. So that was kind of brought out there. But when I actually had time to think about it as I was driving home just a little bit more, I'd probably go with Trey Magoo. And the reason I would go with him is because, number one, he was the pitcher of the year in Altoona this year. And he was kind of overshadowed by Roansy Contreras, and in some ways rightfully so, because his stuff's electric and Trey's isn't. Trey right. is one of those crafty lefties. He's got like this changeup that he just basically pulls a string on and makes people look silly, but he's one of those guys that, you know, didn't pitch very well early on in his Pirates career. Started out in Greensboro, came up, and actually had only started one game in Greensboro, and then started 18 games in Altoona, stayed healthy, and didn't really have like that blow up bad start. Like it was like,
right.
I feel like he's like one of those guys that's just very consistent, very level headed. And maybe it was nice that he was playing in front of friends and family every single home game since he's a local boy. But he's one that kind of sticks out to me as someone who persevered through the season and basically filled in where he needed to for Altoona and succeeded the entire time.
Yeah. See, I was going to go Cody Bolton, but I'm not sure where he'll start next season. So that's probably not fair. He might actually start in AAA. I don't really know what they'll do with him. Omar Cruz is a good one. That's a possibility. I could see that. Ji-Won Bae is another one I was thinking of. Matthew Frazier. If he keeps hitting the way he did after his call up to Double A, you could see that.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I'll throw somebody out there that I'm just, and this is just because of the position he plays, and we'll see what ends up happening. But someone like a Carter Benz.
Yeah.
Just from the catcher standpoint.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it, but yeah.
I'm saying, you know, if Perez, I don't necessarily know what they're going to do with Perez, but I'm just trying to think of from a positional standpoint, at some point, would you see him maybe? But I don't look at the roster and think it's kind of hard to pick out a guy other than Frazier, right?
Like, it's really more about him than it is Perez. Perez could have his leg amputated and that wouldn't promote Carter Benz to the major leagues, but mostly because the guy hasn't shown anything since he's been here.
No, he hasn't.
But it's, you know, anything's possible. You never can tell. Got any more here?
Yeah, let's keep going. So we've got.
And while he's looking that up, get your questions in PiratesFanForum@yahoo.com.
Okay, this is from Lucas Oberg, and he asks, with the Pirates farm system now being one of the best in Major League Baseball, do you think the prospect phase of trading for minor league players is over?
No.
I don't think yet.
I don't think it'll ever be over.
Not to the extent that it is. It's over to the extent, I think, that we've just seen what's happened, but it's still going to occur. It has to for a team like the Pirates.
It's never going to stop happening, but it's done happening in mass for a little while here is the best way I can say it. Craig, you feel the same way?
Yeah, I think there was like the the sell-off or whatever you would want to call it, or the mass amount of trades of guys that, you know, we all knew were probably on their way out. But I mean, people are saying, you know, let's bring in another free agent like a Tyler Anderson. It would be, unless you're bringing somebody in on a 2-year deal, which we've seen some teams do, like the Royals and the Tigers, when they bring in their free agents, of giving them, you know, those 2-year deals. But if it's going to be just that 1-year deal again, you're obviously going to be looking to sell off. And I mean, I could still see, you know, Steven Brault out the window at some point, a Chad Kuhl out the window, Colin Moran at some point. I mean, so like you said, I don't think it's ever going to end, but I think it might be, instead of, like, you know, leaving the faucet on the whole way, you might start to close it and just let it drip, hopefully, so that we're not, you know, selling off everybody and doing a complete turnover all the time. But it's going to have to happen.
But I actually think we might see some more actual baseball trades this year. I really do. Like, we were talking about Steven Brault. Well, Steven Brault's a guy that he hasn't been able to stay healthy here. And I don't trust him to be the veteran in this rotation. I really don't. I don't trust him to stay on the field. I really don't. So he's a guy you could move and potentially get a reliever back, a young reliever back. Something like that. Somebody major league ready.
That's what I was just going to say. Is it's not maybe that that these types of trades will still occur, but the type of player you might be looking for in return, as far as being maybe major league ready, maybe to help, you know, plug in and play in the bullpen, something like that. That's what I think you're going to see. It might start changing the type of return that you're looking for, as opposed to just trying to flood the system with talent and young guys.
Yeah, the best way I can say it is the class of player they get back better change.
Mm.
Because what they can't do is continue to bring in guys that are going to cause 40-man decisions every year. It was cute this year, and I think it's about the best they could get for some of what they had to move. But if you're going to move, like, say, a Colin Moran, which I don't think they will. I really don't. But if you're going to move a Colin Moran.
Split on it, but.
But if you're going to move him, you got to bring back lottery tickets, and you got to bring back major league ready players. You can't be bringing back guys that are going to rot in AAA. It's just not feasible with the roster construction that's going on. We're talking about the first wave, and we already have all these decisions to make about the 40-man, which we haven't even touched yet. But that's only going to get worse year over year with what they've got coming in Altoona and Greensboro.
Right. I mean,
so it's not like that's going to stop.
Yeah. You would be, and it's good that we're talking about this as, you know, this little bit of, it's a change. It's not a huge change, but it's a distinct change. And it's good that it lets you know that, okay, well, things are progressing, and the next part of it is who you're getting back. So we got time for one more.
I see you got Nick pulled up, and he's a good one.
So this is from Nick Camuso on Twitter. I am so bad pronouncing names, by
the way.
Well,
that's why I made you do it.
Yeah, I know. But Nick's always, he's a good follow, man. And I've heard through the grapevine that we may actually get him as a guest one of these days, if we can tear him away from his jet setting lifestyle that he has.
Oh, we will.
But so Nick says, or asks the question, and this is always he's always a good topic here, is Mitch Keller.
Yeah.
Mitch Keller is popping up a lot in these 2022 rotation projections. Has he done enough to warrant that since his recall, especially with so many starting pitching candidates?
I got an answer, but who wants to go first? Do you want to go, or do you want Craig?
Craig, go.
Go ahead, Craig.
Lack of options, so yes. I mean, I know that people are going to say that
they're excited there, didn't he?
Everybody that listens to my podcast and sees me on Twitter at all, I thought he should have stayed down in AAA for the rest of the season. I thought there was no reason to call him back up if there wasn't going to be any drastic change. I mean, I think he had like a little bit of a delivery, you know,
tweak,
but I mean, I saw him in his last game down in Indy, and he was getting hit all over the place by the Tigers team that didn't even have its best
prospects
play at the time.
He texts me from the stands. Okay, he's in Indianapolis. He texts me. I'm looking at my phone, and it's Craig. He goes, "Yeah, Keller, he ain't it." That's all he wrote. And I'm like, "What happened?" And he goes, "Look at the box score. I won't even bother telling you more."
Yeah, just wasn't hitting his spots, and velocity's been back down, and it's just been, I mean, but unless you're bringing in like more than one free agent, I don't see how he doesn't get his start in the starting rotation next year. I mean, even if you bring and you have Yahure starting the year with the team, I mean, you got Bryce Wilson, JT Brubaker, Will Crow. I mean, there's some guys that it's that he's, even though he's not performing that well, he's performing better than some of those guys. So mm-hmm. I just see him. He's probably going to be in the starting rotation. And I mean, I guess we're just gonna have to see what happens. We're going to roll the dice here.
See, I think a lot of people are answering this with the knowledge of being Pirates fans. We know he's going to be in the rotation next year because he will. and it's smart, really. I mean, like you give him another half season to show you what he is. And if he doesn't work out, then he's either a bullpen arm or he's Carson Palmer. It's one or the other. Next year's the proving ground. This year, you know, he gets one more pass as, "Oh, you had your chain jerked a little bit. We get it." Next year, that's it.
And you know, here's what I did too. Like, I went back and looked at look, I just did September starts. He's got four starts in September.
Yep.
And because you start going back a little further and they're just so wildly fluctuating that I don't even know where it's fair to cut him off at, where it looks like you're trying to either make his numbers look better or worse.
Well, see, if you started out positive, like people tell you, you would just take all his good starts.
See, that's just it. I've got to stay positive. I've got to. Just like Craig, super positive.
Yeah, just take out, and even if he has one bad start for that month, you take that month out and you say, if he didn't have a bad start that game.
Oh,
that's how you get it.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, so look, the good news is in those four starts, five or six innings every time out.
Yeah.
So he's at least making – the bar has been set so low with him that people think that if he can just make it five innings and not get shelled, even if he has 10 base runners,
right,
that it's a good start. I mean, good is relative when it comes to, you know, Mitch Keller at this point.
Yeah.
8 earned runs, 21 and two-thirds innings. Man, 34 base runners in those four starts. I mean, you just can't make – at the major league level with that many guys on base all the time.
Craig just did a whole study about his FIP and it's
yeah.
The FIP is the number people love to throw at you. And I mean, he's going to start. That's really all there is to it. And he probably doesn't deserve it, but one more shot. On that note, let's go ahead and take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about promotions that have happened, and I'm going to ask a question that I know is going to drive Craig nuts. Back, welcome to the Pirates Fan Forum here on BK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. Jim Stamm with me, and Craig Toth from Inside the Bucks Basement and Bucks in the Basement podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about the promotions that recently happened. Finally, in some cases, up to AAA. I kind of wonder why they dragged their feet on some of them, but regardless, we know there were 8 people that were pulled up to AAA, and I think largely, Craig, I agree with you, what you wrote the other day about them being primarily paper moves. I mean, they needed to happen anyway, and they happened. But regardless, get to see them for a few games here. And Kanan Smith-Ajigba got called up, Kyle Mitchell, Rodolfo Castro, Ronzi Contreras, and that's one of the ones when I'm kind of like, finally. But that injury, I think, really prevented him from getting a chance. If he didn't get injured, I think he'd have been up a while ago. Same could be said for O'Neill Cruz, really, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Yerry De Los Santos, I know we talked about him a little bit. Craig, you've been watching him for a long time. He's one of the first prospects I remember you writing about.
Yeah.
And Osvaldo Beto, and then everybody's favorite guy to either love or hate, Mason Martin.
He is a really...
he's a lightning rod.
He really is.
Yeah, he really is. So, you know, all these guys are pulled up to AAA, and O'Neill Cruz right away does something good, and Rowanzi looked okay for 3.2 innings, and I think they were just kind of getting him a little bit of playing time before the end of the season here. That's
just a little taste.
Yeah, that's likely to be the last time he pitches, I would imagine. Maybe one more time. We'll see. But any really, thoughts on that, Jim? I mean, anybody that they pulled up that you were super excited to see or thought they drug their feet on a little bit, or anybody they rushed? I don't think so.
No, I think they are definitely in the anti-rushing category across the board. I mean, if you really think about it, I can't think of anybody under Sherrington so far that we have sat there and said, whoa, 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 this seems quick. Was there anybody, Craig?
There was the one guy, right?
Fabricio Macias.
Yeah.
He went up from single A the whole way up to triple A.
And I don't think we really ever understood that either. That was never really clarified as to why they did that. But
as a whole, it's just, it's not, I don't think there's anybody you see that looks like, oh, well, wait a second, why are they here at this point?
Kranick really moved, but Kranick moved mostly because they had never seen him do what he was able to do once he showed up to spring training.
Right. It forced them to really do that.
Yeah. And thank God it did, because to be honest, he got a lot of the playing time that Miguel Yajure would have gotten. You know, and I don't think that he would have gotten nearly as many major league starts as he did if Yajure was healthy.
Or Cody Bolton.
Yeah, or Cody Bolton. But I mean, Cody Bolton is James Bond at this point. International man of mystery.
Yeah. Nope,
is what to make of him. I mean, he's a highly ranked prospect, but he ain't pitched in 2 years.
Yeah, he's almost getting, at least from... When we see lists and people that are excited, but he almost is getting a little bit forgotten from the fan base, at least.
Yep.
And that's just the nature of, you know, you're not pitching, you're not playing. They've got other guys. He tends to get lost in the shuffle at this point.
So they're not going to cut Mitch Keller for him.
Yeah. You know what? We'll leave that to somebody else online to speculate.
I figured it would happen. I mean, if anybody really kind of, I think, earned the promotion, but at the same time, I have some questions about still. I'd have to go with Mason Martin, because I am concerned about that K rate. And I know that it's not as big a deal in the game as it used to be, but it's just something he's never been able to get under control, really. And I just feel it's going to get exponentially worse as he moves up. And I'm afraid right now that he's going to stall in AAA. And the thing is, if he does stall in AAA, then, you know, you'd almost rather find out quickly that it's going to happen. Like next year, you want to know that's the case. If he's Will Craig, you want to know next year.
It's exactly who I was thinking is he almost, look, I hope I'm wrong. He almost seems to me to be the textbook example of a guy that maybe just tops out at AAA. He gets some looks. He just never has quite enough consistency, strikes out too much. And he hangs around in AAA because he's just not able to make that next jump. He seems to me to be like, if I look at a picture of someone in the dictionary, I see a Mason Martin type. And I know that'll get some people upset. But,
yeah.
Craig, I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, he exploded onto people's radar, you know, a couple years ago from his jump from, you know, Greensboro, where he was hitting the cover off the ball, which, you know, people will now understand, you know, it's a bandbox. It's the same thing as Great American Ballpark. A lot of the balls, you know, wouldn't go out there. But then he continued to do that in Bradenton. And then he did it in the beginning in Altoona until pitchers got to see him more than once. Because you'll notice the beginning of the year, he was all over social media. Like, here's another Mason Martin blast. Here's 2-1 game, you know, into the roller coaster. And then all of a sudden, you didn't see Mason Martin a whole lot more. And yeah, he did hit like a few more, and it, you know, his total kind of came back up a little bit. But I mean, he did seem to work on, you know, his patience to the plate, his base on balls percentage did come up over the last month or so. But he's so much of an all or nothing guy. And yeah, actually a kid, like, he's still young. Like, when you're talking about like these people being called up and like having to be protected and all this different stuff, I think of even like him and Cal Mitchell, like they're both like still like, I think 22, maybe have just turned 23, if that, and you're having to talk about protecting these guys already. And that's, but I guess it's the nature of the game. But Mason Martin, I love the power he brings. And I think that's why he's, you know, kind of gotten so much attention. But you can't overlook the K rate, especially, you know, we'll see what he does in AAA, and we're going to see a lot of that next year. But if it sticks up around the 30% mark, you know what that 30% mark turns into once you get up to the major leagues.
I do. That's it.
That turns it into, you know, Anthony Alford and his 44 to 50%. That's what it turns into.
Yeah, in some cases. In other cases, I feel like as they face better pitching, it tends to get a little bit easier for them to handle the strike zone. So I do think that the promotion can have the opposite effect sometimes on guys like that, because
he's just so reliant, though, on the power.
Yeah, but he might be a wild swinger, too. That's the thing. When you watch him, he's missing a lot in the strike zone. Like, that's kind of what I think he could probably fix. If he stops missing in the strike zone, I think his K rate goes down a little bit. And consistent pitching tends to kind of bring that about a little bit more.
You're starting to sound a little bit like Justin right now, with his Mason Martin. He loves him some Mason Martin, and he will he massages that K rate to, I mean, he needs to get up with Deshaun Watson for being a massager, because he loves to kind of get that K rate and that walk rate to where he thinks it's going to be acceptable.
That was a really, really excellent football joke. It actually kind of stopped me in my tracks for a second. Mason Martin is an interesting piece, though. The power doesn't lie. I do believe, though, as you face better pitching with more consistent, it becomes a little easier to read the zone. I think that's something that helps some players and hurts others. You know, like it hasn't helped Anthony out. He's still changing everything. But Mason Martin, I've seen him start to lay off those sliders away, and the sliders that are coming in on his feet. And I've seen him start to lay off on the curveballs bouncing in front of him. So if he starts facing people that are coming a little closer to the strike zone, I do think maybe we'll see a little bit better contact numbers. But yeah, that could be wishful thinking on my part too. Because of everybody on this list, you know, the one I'm most excited about is probably O'Neal Cruz, because of the power again. And I do believe, just from what we've started to see post-injury here, that he's got that hole fixed in his swing.
It's a different swing. It's 100% a different, like, it is such a different swing. It's not even funny. It's so compact now.
It's beautiful.
He could, yeah. I mean, before he would approach the ball and it was like this giant looping. Yep. I almost equated it to if Charles Barkley, if anybody's ever seen his golf swing,
where
it was just like he couldn't stop himself from this giant loop and he would try to stop it. And now it's a smooth stroke and it's very compact. It looks so much different.
Yeah. It's honestly probably the most encouraging overt in your face development thing I can say that I saw this year. and not to say like that one kid makes your development system, but it's been a problem with him ever since they acquired him from LA. So I kind of thought maybe it was an ingrained problem that just wasn't going to be able to go away. What I've seen this season and his growth gives me great hope for his career. I have much more faith in O'Neal Cruz now than I did at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And maybe that was the good thing with him, that he was so raw in so many ways. He was still growing, for God's sakes. I think since the Pirates got him from the Dodgers, I think he's grown 3 or 4 inches since then. I mean, so you're talking about literal growth, figurative growth, you know, and he still could be, he still can be coached up to the point where you're seeing it now, hopefully, that swing, it does. It looks entirely different.
Yeah. And that's been incredible. Then you got like steady performers. Like Cal Mitchell has just, I think, been just a steady, slow, measurable incline upward from the moment he was drafted and started playing till now. I've never seen him really deviate down too much. Defense has always kind of been there. I've really liked his game the whole time, and I'm happy to see him get this promotion too. And Kanan Smith-Ajigba definitely deserved it. I mean, if anything, he probably was held back by injury as well. That's, boy, is that a theme this year.
Man.
Injury just has wrecked this system, like up and down.
Yeah, I think when people are talking about like the promotions, like why promotions didn't happen and stuff and why it was so slow is, I mean, you look, I mean, Andy Rodriguez, you can start down in Bradenton. He was injured. Nick Gonzalez, he was injured. You come up, you know, even like a, you know, Carmen Majinski was injured. Right. Then you keep on coming up through the system. Rowanzi, O'Neill, Kanan. I mean, everybody was kind of injured. But I did want to say the one thing about Cal Mitchell that I always say is I went and saw him, Travis Swaggerty, and Mason Martin play down in Bradenton back in 2019. And I've said this every single time anybody asked me is who was the best player on that field. And I said, it was Cal Mitchell every single time. Yeah. I went down to see Mason Martin and Travis Swaggerty, and Cal Mitchell was the best player on the field.
But tell me why, like, give me a reason for that. I'm just curious as to what you saw, Craig.
What I saw was a steady, clean approach at the plate. I watched them for like about 3 games. He just basically looked more mature and more, I guess, developed at that point in time. And a lot of people were downplaying his defense then. It was getting the lower grades and stuff like that. But he was actually making Travis Swaggerty's job in center field easier by how much ground he was covering in right field. I went down there and I saw Mason Martin strike out a whole bunch of times. I saw Travis Swaggerty not really hit the ball that great. And I saw Cal Mitchell. And it might have just been the series that I saw, but it just looked like that he was a lot more polished than both of those players, which, I mean, for being more polished than Mason Martin, understandably, but,
right,
you know, to be more polished than Travis Swaggerty, which I still have never seen, it really impressed me.
I saw Altoona play, I think, about 4 times this year. I made it out there. I mean, Cal Mitchell impressed me every time I was out there too. And it wasn't even just the number of hits that he got. It's there's a certain, and this is just a very subjective thing, but when you watch them on the field, there's some of them that just look like pros.
Yeah.
And some of them that look like amateurs. I know they're all pros once you get to the minor leagues, but some of them got that look, that swagger. They're here to conduct business.
Mm-hmm.
Cal Mitchell's one of those
guys. The men versus the boys type.
And I'll be honest, another guy who has that in him is Rodolfo Castro. The guy.
And we've talked about that recently. Yeah.
We just talked about that last week. But he's another one that finally got the call up to AAA. And I'm excited to see what he can do too. I really liked his cup of coffee in the majors, and he didn't look like the moment was too big for him.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I just hope that the wall that he hit down in Altoona wasn't due to that jerking up and down and not having him It's just, he fell off a cliff at the end.
You're not suggesting the boo-boo face, are you?
No, here's my thing is I never saw why, if you were going to send him down, you didn't send him to Indianapolis to face the better competition. And it was a long season. It's one that they haven't played in a while. And maybe he just kind of hit a wall. But he went down the first time and continued to hit. And when he went down the second time, just kind of looked like a completely different player just for those last, you know, few weeks I saw him down there.
I think another fair point there is, you know, we mostly talk about the pitchers, but this is a lot of games for a lot of these position players too. Is after not playing last year for the most part, that's a lot of baseball for a lot of these guys, and
a lot of young guys who have never had to do that before.
So I mean, getting tired is a real thing. Whether you believe Brian Reynolds needs a break, whether Brian believes he needs a break or not, they need a break every once in a while. And I think that's why you see teams do that. But all these promotions really got me thinking about something. And I brought it up to Craig and I watched his head explode via text message. So I had to bring it up once we got on the show here. Who is the next breakout star for this club? I mean, is it anybody that we just listed? Is it anybody in the system? And I'll be honest, like, I think on the team right now, the only one I can say on the 26 man is Brian Reynolds. Star, breakout star. Maybe Hayes will be that. That's an acceptable answer. It might be the easiest and the lowest hanging fruit. But the only one I count right now is Brian Reynolds. Is there another one? Craig?
On the current roster?
No, period, in the system. Who's the next one that's going to be that breakout star? That one that like comes up here and can't miss. Everybody screaming for an extension within a week.
I mean, I think if it's going to be anybody, it's going to be O'Neill Cruz. I think that's like the easiest, and that's another maybe low hanging fruit. If it's going to be anybody, and it would sure make this rebuild possibly happen a little bit quicker. The problem I have with him is that, you know, we still haven't decided the position. And I know everybody says that the bat will play.
The Pirates have.
Yeah, well, he's a shortstop.
Yep.
He's a shortstop. Well, he's actually made up his mind, too, because they had talked to him down there, and they said he's maybe warming to the idea a little bit, but he also wants to be a shortstop. And so, I mean, but I feel like he's like the type of player that's athletic enough to make that transition a little bit better. And he's also actually played, you know, some outfield, you know, growing up, like that's a position that he was fairly comfortable with. But I mean, the bat will play. And I think if it's going to be anybody, it's going to be Cruz, but none of the names we listed are guaranteed.
See, and that right there, as we talk about this rebuild and how it's going to go, and you need some horses.
Right.
And it scares me a little bit if that's the first guy we point to in the system, other than already having Reynolds. So I totally agree at this point. I don't even think he's a breakout star. He's just a stud. And so I worry about if that's the guy we're looking toward, as much as he's got the potential and the ability, you know, do I see him as the next Acuna or Wander Franco? No, you know, that worries me that that's the guy that we look to pin our hopes on it.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about guys with high ceilings, and I think Craig tends to lean more towards examining someone's floor than their ceiling, and I tend to lean that way as well. So when he said O'Neill Cruz, that was the name I was thinking too, because he's close. And I feel like he's close to maximizing his tools. So I kind of believe in it a little bit more, if that's a good way to put it. I think Henry Davis has every possibility of being that. I really do. I think Nick Gonzalez, I'd like to see him hit outside of Greensboro before I start getting too excited. I really would. A lot of home runs this year.
On the road.
Yeah. I'd really like
to. It's a good point, though.
I'd really like to see him hit.
And I'd like to see him hit on the road. All his most of his home runs, I think it's like three-fourths, if not more, came in Greensboro.
Right. And yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying, is I need to see him outside of Greensboro a little bit. And I think we'll get that opportunity next year. So it's not like we're going to have to wait too long. And I think he's going to be a good player. It's just when we're talking about, like, who's that next big star, like, who's that McCutchen? Who's that?
Yeah, right.
Who's that Brian Reynolds? Who's that guy?
Because you're going to need that.
Yeah.
I mean, so that worries me a little bit.
We don't have those 60 FB.
No,
in the minor leagues, we have some 45s and 50s and things like that. They're good players. They profile to be good players. But you need stars. You
know? Yeah, I mean, look around baseball and look at some of these guys that are young, and they are bona fide studs.
Yeah,
I mean, they are carrying their teams. Look at Guerrero. I mean, what a monster.
Adam Wainwright.
he just needs to pitch against the Pirates constantly.
No, he needs to retire.
Oh, man.
Please. And him and Yachty both. They both need to retire. I can't believe what they're doing.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing here is that when I look at these rebuilding teams and the teams that have rebuilt previously, is that they had the talent to trade from to be able to get bona fide talent from the get-go. I mean, a lot of people look back to like the Chris Sale trade. Like we didn't have Chris Sale.
Right.
Like we had Tyler Anderson, Joe Musgrove, and Jameson Taillon. Like
and Josh Bell and Marte. And
yeah, I mean, Marte for me is probably the one that had one of the highest trading potentials and got two pretty high end, like, but still lottery tickets. Like they weren't as developed as some of the other teams. Like we're not trading, you know, for Eloy Jimenez and Juan Moncada. We're trading for Tucopito Marcano. Yeah. Like that's where like the big difference is in some of these like things, is that we don't have that. We don't have a McCutchen and we don't have a Marte in the system right now. We might have a Neil Walker. Like, well, it's like the highest.
I mean, on that bright note, in all sincerity, I do believe O'Neal Cruz has a good shot at it. And I think that's probably the next great hope here.
I mean, and let me just add this real quick. I mean, maybe some of this comes from the pitching side too, with the Quinn Priesters of the world, Contreras. I mean, if you can hit on a couple of those dudes, which, as we all know, arms tend to be a little bit, you know, not dependable. But if maybe it's more on that side, I'll take it.
Yeah. Well, hey, anybody wants to get a hold of any of us, you can get a hold of Craig on Twitter at Bucks Basement, and check out everything he writes over at InsideTheBucksBasement.com. You might find someone else familiar over there. And Jim Stam
at JimStam22 on Twitter, for the city _412, all Pittsburgh, all the time. So
yeah, and on PiratesFanForum.com with any questions, follow us on Twitter, and we'll talk to you later. This was a really good conversation. Thanks for joining us, Craig. We had a good time.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I'll see you in the Twitterverse.
Absolutely, brother.
Let's go, Bucks.